Turn it up.
Get ready.
You're tuned in to VO Buzz Weekly.
The show where aspiring voice actors,
established VO pros,
and curious fans alike get to meet and learn.
From the mega successful talent in voiceover.
Hear their personal stories.
Find out how they became so successful.
Learn their secrets and join them at the top.
Come on, and get buzzed with us. Be all you wanna be. So come on, and get buzzed with us.
And now, prepare to get seriously buzzed with your hosts, Chuck Duran and Stacey J. Aswad.
Hey everybody, I'm Stacey J.
And I'm Chuck Duran.
Welcome to Part 2 with Joan Baker and Rudy Gaskin.
I think we waste no time and go there now. What do you say?
Absolutely.
Let's go. So, Joan.
Yes.
How did you get into teaching? What motivated you to do that?
Well, this is interesting about that. I got approached when I was a dancer to teach.
Yeah.
And the way that I was told to teach, and this was at a very prominent dance school. So
say
I
it.
Got American Dance Machine. It's yes. no longer there. They did show-stopping Broadway
yeah.
numbers. And I got asked to teach. That the woman that owned the school.
We're having a moment.
I love it.
Now, Joan.
I missed it.
We're not making fun of you.
No, I know.
We love you.
Chuck is just looking at Rudy going, welcome to my world.
Yeah, welcome to my world.
Welcome to my world, man.
Okay, go.
I sit back and watch the show.
Yeah.
See, you don't have to buy a ticket. You get all access.
Front row seat.
Right, right.
Now that's voiceover.
That's right.
Wow.
That's right.
Okay.
Okay, back to you, Joan.
Okay, so what I was going to say was that I got completely turned off by teaching. So I didn't think I was ever going to teach again. And then when I started doing voiceover, one of the first jobs I got was Imus in the Morning on WFAN. And I was in an acting class, and every time we would meet, which was, I think, once a week, I would talk about the different jobs that I got, and everyone in there was more like, they were incredible actors, but they weren't working as much. And I was doing voiceover, and I was working all the time. So the school came to me, and they said, we'd like you to teach. And I said, okay, but in my heart, I was like, I don't want to teach. And then they told me, there's 4 students. And I said, oh, okay. Well, what I did was, I was like, no problem. So when I started teaching, I was also when I was beginning voiceover. It must have been at least 2 or 3 years into it, so I wasn't into it very long. So it ended up being a way that I could share my experience and kind of laugh at it, but learn from it. Mm-hmm. So normally you'd walk around in your head and you'd maybe, you know, get upset about things or whatever. But because I had this class of 4 people that were all like this, I was able to talk about what happened at this audition and that audition, and then we'd get out the scripts and we'd start working, and I would work with the kind of direction I was getting. Mm-hmm. And I realized, I said, I love this. I love sharing with people. I love the kind of way we can laugh at things. I don't have to take it so seriously, where things in the past I had. So it was an outlet for me, and I got to see their smiling faces, learn something that they didn't know was going to be incredible, but it turned out being incredible. And I also realized that I could utilize the teaching situation in the way that I saw fit. I didn't have to dread it like I had in the past. So I started using it as a networking tool. So I would invite producers and casting people to the class as my class was growing and getting bigger at this acting school. And it would be someone I'd audition for, and it would be a producer, and he'd say, yeah, I'd love to come. I love to teach. And then he'd come and share with the class, and then I'd have them interact with them with a script, and it became a real thing. And then at one point I realized I can't live without this. I really love it. And it became a second kind of career without me realizing it would, or without me thinking I want to teach. Now, I do remember when I was a kid and all the kind of messiness of me growing up and how hurt and in pain I was all the time about things. I do remember an adult coming up to me saying to me, one thing I can tell about you, young lady, is you're going to make a great teacher one day. Why she said that to me, I had no idea. I was kind of like, huh?
Psychic.
What do you think now?
I think it was a brilliant woman, and I think she was right. Mm. And I'm grateful for that kind of positive I never really
I
got.
I think she maybe planted a seed, yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly.
But I think that because you have empathy. You
know, I have a lot of empathy.
So, and, you know, I think that's really a really important thing
yes.
as a teacher is to
also,
have that ability.
Also, something I realized about myself, too, is that I'm really about dreams being fulfilled. Mm. Not just my own, but everyone else's around me.
Yeah.
And that's the one thing I feel that I'm able to channel through my teaching is that I am so focused on others' dreams being fulfilled and how I can kind of tap into that.
Yeah.
That's what lights me up. That's what gets me up in the morning. And the same thing with That's Voiceover. It's about people's dreams coming true and being fulfilled. That just lights me up.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, that's cool.
From a teaching perspective.
You are lit up. She is
right?
lit up.
I'm lit up, people. Lit up.
Come get some.
She jumped back into her dance machine.
Oh, you are such a ham. I cannot believe that you don't live in L.A.
You guys, just be patient because she's gonna come out of her shell a little. Just
a little bit, yes.
Poor Joan. But keeping your teacher hat on,
uh-huh.
What do you think are some of the essential elements that someone needs to have today to be in the voice of a business and be successful?
I think an attitude, a particular attitude that's more open, that isn't the kind of attitude that you have when you're learning something in school. Mm-hmm. Like, I notice when I work with a lot of people, it's like, 1 + 1, it's supposed to equal 2. I don't know how I'm going to get there. I'm going to work really hard. They have a certain attitude that's very squeezed, mm-hmm. right? You have to have an attitude that's very loose and non-linear. There's that word again. Because I think when you're learning voiceover, it is non-linear. Everyone's different. Everyone listens differently. Everyone processes differently. And also, I think there's a lot of right brain work in voiceover. There's a lot of pictures and images that you have to respond off of. And if you're tight and everything has to be a certain way and you have to be right, it gets in the way.
Yeah.
So I think when you allow yourself to slow down your breathing, to take in what's being said to you, you're also practicing voiceover because you have to take in direction. You have mm-hmm. to have it sift through you. Then you allow it to sift through the wash and out in front of the Neumann microphone, right?
Hello.
Right? So a particular attitude of openness mm-hmm. and wanting to be a sponge. Also, I think because the copy reading is about the conversational read. I think it's important to develop, if you don't, an attitude of observing life, observing conversation. How does one kind of dissect conversation so that you can recreate it authentically in the booth?
Exactly.
Right.
And you have to be able to open yourself up, your inner life. That's what we're getting paid to do, is to have an inner life. Otherwise, why not hire the editor?
Yeah.
Who's not trained. Yeah. The difference is that we have an inner life that we're able to access. So that's also a process, and it takes patience. Mm-hmm. Especially if you're not an actor. You don't have to be an actor to do voiceover, but you do have to have actor skills.
Yes.
Right.
Right? Yes. I mean, it's nice if you're an actor too, but not every actor makes a great voiceover person.
That's
so,
true.
Right?
Yes.
So, but we need the actor skills. And so you have to think like an actor.
So Rudy, we cannot have you here. Without...
Sorry.
Okay.
See you later, honey.
Sorry.
Listen, there's some people outside that said you have to go.
Okay.
I don't want to give up.
And they're wearing little white coats.
Get my parole officer on the phone.
There's a weird jacket, but it kind of matches what you're wearing. Okay, so you are a branding specialist, guru, expert. All these words, when people talk about you, they all... are used. Guru,
I do branding.
Yes. So you look at the whole big picture.
Yes.
Voiceover, as you said back in part one, is part of that. So how do you focus on the voiceover piece and really bring that down to a level of someone branding them for voiceover as an individual?
Oh, as an individual?
Yeah.
When you're working with an individual, it's a bit like to sort of try to begin to size it down. If you think about other pursuits that are based on individuals like lawyers mm-hmm. or doctor practices, these folks get branded by word of mouth for the most part. Mm-hmm. They hang a shingle, someone nearby gets sick, they go in, they do a good job, okay, they tell their friends. Mm-hmm. With voiceover, the difference is hanging a shingle doesn't get you a job. You've got to really go out there and start to let someone know that you're available and you have a particular skill. Mm-hmm. What happens for most folks is they try to do that branding side on their own in terms of what should my materials look like, what should my demo reel sound like, and they don't go to professionals who understand how your look, feel, and content match up with the people who are buying it.
Right.
Okay? So they jump out there with whatever they have, and it gets rejected. They have no idea why it's rejected, and they have no one to turn to start to sift through what the possibilities may be. So one of the things I do with folks who are looking to brand themselves as voiceover actors is get them to stop back and start from the beginning, mm-hmm. to take a step back and start from the beginning, which is, who are you? What are you made of? What do you have to offer? What are your assets? And the assets are not just your talent, but who are the people in your lives who can have an impact mm-hmm. on what you're trying to do? Most people know someone who's in marketing, mm-hmm. who is a professional. If they really start to look around.
So look at your sphere of influence and see
yeah.
who
right.
you can talk to.
That's
start
your Rolodex. Look at your Rolodex. Mm-hmm.
Begin to tap into those people because it can be very expensive if you, on an hourly basis.
Right.
You're trying to brand yourself because that's a fairly lengthy process. And over time, it has to evolve. Sometimes it has to shift radically depending on what may be going on in your life.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Or if you make some kind of huge mistake and you need to do some damage control.
Right, right.
So it's important to start to build a network of professionals who understand branding and marketing and let them take a look at what you're doing. So you just draw a logo on a napkin one day after you've had a couple of tequilas and you say, that's it, same color as my dog. And you slap it on a CD and you start pushing that that's your brand. Mm-hmm. And a lot of folks think that is branding. Once I have some kind of a mark and I come up with some kind of a slogan, I'm ready to go.
Right, mm-hmm.
yeah. But what that slogan and that mark mean to the people that you're trying to pitch could be completely off. One thing I would say keep in mind as an individual voice actor is that you are pitching professional marketers.
Right.
So what you're doing as an amateur, or you might think is kind of cool, or that your high school kid drew a great logo because he's good at art, you're now taking that over to Ogilvy and saying, you know, hire me as a voice talent. And these people are doing that every day.
Yeah. They eat, you know, sleep, and breathe it.
They're winning the big awards doing marketing and advertising.
Right, right.
So you don't want to send them something that's amateurish. Go to a professional.
That's a great point.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's a really great point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Never even thought of that.
Mm-hmm.
I got to start everything all over. No.
We're going to pause while Chuck rebuilds.
I've always been so into marketing. Like, you know, you go to my website and it says demos at rock, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And you visually read how everything's written, and you go in, you listen to my demos and how they're produced, and then you come in and you meet me.
It matches.
Goes together.
Yes.
It's like I always tell people, when you buy a Beyonce CD, yes, people do buy CDs still, and you go and buy a CD and you look at it and then you play it, it looks like it sounds.
Right.
Yes.
And they put a lot of time into that, correct?
That's correct.
Yes.
Even though every CD may have a different image and vibe, mm-hmm. right? But that's all on purpose.
Right.
It all fits
into the same family. There's a continuity at play.
Is less better than more? Like, if you can't go full throttle, maybe for whatever your budget constraints are, is it better to do less as your branding and leave it a little more plain and open-ended than to do too much and almost put yourself on the wrong path in the wrong direction?
That's a tough question because even when you try to do less, how do you do less mm-hmm. becomes a question. I mean, you can do
right.
something very simple, like your name in black on a white background. And that can be done in a very classy way that mm-hmm. really has an impact. It can also look like someone just threw it together in a
right.
Word program.
Right.
So doing less is not necessarily the answer. I think the real question has to do with putting the cart before the horse. Mm-hmm. You don't want to do that. When you really know what you have and how to present it, then you're ready to go with it. Until you really understand who is my audience and what is it that I'm presenting to them, and what you really want to know is what is the end result I'm looking for.
Yeah,
when I give
backwards.
Them this,
yeah.
something is supposed to happen. You need to know what that something is supposed to be. They're going to call me and say, we need a voice like yours. That's the goal.
Mm-hmm.
Or the agency is going to call you and do that, or the buyer is going to call you and say that.
Mm. Right.
But that's your goal. Now you start creating things that will lead to that goal. Until you know that what you're creating is likely to do that, you shouldn't put it out there.
Mm.
Because you don't really get second chances that easily.
No.
Yes.
The first impressions last a long time.
Yeah. A long time.
And you create demo reels so you know what happens. You've met enough people who've come to you with demo reels that didn't work.
Right?
Then you have to redo them. Because
And we don't want to talk about that because we can be here for days.
And we might.
Yeah, exactly. Everybody's going to fall asleep.
I'd rather spend several thousand dollars more making a demo reel that is the right thing to distribute than try to overcome an agent who has in his or her mind that I'm not quite ready because of the other reel that they heard of mine.
Exactly.
But you know what, too? I want to add that most people spend more time buying the right car and being willing to put an investment in that than they are a career like voiceover. Yes, there's going to be an investment.
Yeah.
These are tools to get work. Why wouldn't you want to spend the money in, you know, with when you find the right person that you, that's powerful for you? Why wouldn't you want to spend the money?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To do it right, just like you would if you wanted to get a car.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You see what I mean?
Yeah. And to go with that is that you sit here and let's say you spent a good amount of time and money educating yourself, right? And becoming really, really, really great at what you do. And you're doing it because, man, I have to do this in order to become successful at voiceover, right?
Yes.
And then you get to the part where it's the next part between actually fulfilling the dream of working as a voice actor, and that's the part that you, like, cut yourself short on.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, oh, I got a friend, and his buddy has a studio in his garage,
and he's
going to do a demo for me.
That happens all the time.
Really?
Right.
Does this guy know what the talent buyers need to hear today in order for you to actually be valuable?
Yeah. No.
You know what I mean?
Right. That is common. That
very,
is very,
very,
common.
Very common.
And I think that there, and on a certain level, there is a issue around success and being afraid of it. When Don was alive, Don LaFontaine, he would literally call me. He'd say, you must be rich by now, because he said, I've referred so many people to you, right? Half those people never called.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why? Because Don told them who to call, and it was like, oh, I'm afraid of success, so let me avoid that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Then when he passed away, I can't tell you how many emails and phone calls I got from people. Don told me about you, and I don't know why I didn't call, but now I am. That was like coming in like gangbusters, because I remember when Don called me, I'm thinking, I've only gotten a few phone calls, right? But according to him, I should be rich.
Right.
Then he passes away, and then I get the slew of email. It's because you're on the right path all of a sudden, and now you're unconsciously or subconsciously afraid of success.
Mm-hmm.
So you start to do other things. You don't go to the branding experts. You don't go to the demo, you know, experts, the great coach. It's like somehow you're trying to avoid it and come up with ways as to why that is should be so.
Yeah.
And the history of voiceover is one where it's an anonymous craft.
It's behind the scenes.
Not only do we not see the voice over actors because they're off screen, but we don't see the industry.
Yeah.
It has always been a very insider industry. So the average person is completely naive to what it takes.
True.
And there's an assumption that, well, I have a good voice.
Yeah.
Right.
And that should just equal a paycheck.
There you go. Yeah.
And it takes stepping into that. And that's one of the things I think we achieve quite nicely with That's Voiceover is you get a microcosm of the entire industry.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You go in there and you start meeting people and start bouncing your thoughts off of all
of
these professionals.
And how one element affects the other.
Absolutely.
Yes. That's why you have to network with everyone, get to know what everyone does. You don't have to do their jobs. But also people don't realize that when you're hearing voiceover on TV, for example, that is a layered performance. That's just not someone talking, oh, I got a great voice.
Yeah.
That is a layered performance.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's produced.
Right.
Absolutely. What do you feel are some of the trends right now in voiceover?
Well, there's one trend that I'd like to point to, which I think is really relevant to those folks who are working out of home studios. So we know home studios are now a trend.
Yeah.
Everybody's working from home.
Yeah.
People don't even use ISDN anymore. They do, but phone patch now and just do it yourself and mail it in.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. But what I find that's happening, and this is a different kind of trend, is that folks who work at home in their home studios are starting to develop habits about how they work, and it's causing the style and the range of their reads, of how they direct themselves, to become constrained. Mm-hmm. And then that begins to calcify over time. so that they don't even realize that they're delivering the same kind of monotonous performances.
Yeah.
They think they're putting everything into it, but essentially, my script comes out of the printer over here, I always put it over there, I make my tea and I stir it and
Creatures
I start,
of habit.
And then I do my spot. And I do four reads or five reads and I go away for 10 minutes and I come back, I try one more and then I send it off. At a certain point, that layers on top of everything you do. Mm-hmm. And you start to send out stuff that's stunted, really.
It's the same thing over and over, basically, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you don't even realize it. And I work with people and I coach them and I pull things out of them that they're surprised at. Oh, my God. Yeah. I want to come and have you do my audition for me.
Yeah.
You want to pay me to come do your audition? because they're seeing things happen that don't happen when they go home.
Yeah. Right.
And I get them all stirred up and excited and they go home and they'll send me a read. How about this? And it's like, now you're doing exactly what you do every day at home.
Yeah.
So it really takes something, and you have to learn some skills to really shift your direction. Yeah. You need something to come from the outside that will stir you up in a way that you can't help but do something that's different.
Yeah.
And so from a trend perspective, that's not happening yet. But what is happening is that reads are becoming sort of stale.
Mm-hmm.
And
I
some
so
folks
agree
do
with
the
you.
Voice, do the pay-to-play sites.
Yeah.
And those pay-to-play sites kind of have a clock running.
Yeah.
So if you don't get your read in within a certain period of time, then you know you aren't likely to get the job.
Right.
So that adds to the problem because now you're rushing to get in. You're not even taking the time that you really need after a writer and a whole team of advertisers have spent weeks to come up with these 30 seconds or this 60 seconds. You're now in 15 minutes going to digest all that and spit out an audition and send it to them. So that compounds the problem.
Exactly. I hear that so much, and I've had experiences like that too. And it's so funny though, because you know, you have, let's say, you know, McDonald's, right? We all know who they are. They send a script to an ad agency, right? The or people or some sort of a in between, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
If you don't have an agent, and then they send out that script as an audition, right? And we read it, mm-hmm. right? And a lot of people are sending in auditions.
Right.
You know what I mean? Without thinking, well, wait a minute. The ad agency and McDonald's, the people at McDonald's have read this before. They're not looking for somebody to read the stuff. I need to make this thing come alive.
Bring it alive.
Right?
Like, breathe life
so,
into
and,
it.
But they're not delivering jobs. They're delivering auditions. And now how are you going to book from on you see what I'm saying?
Yes.
I always look at things like that, which is what you're saying. Basically, it's like stale. Same thing over and over. You're just reading an audition.
And every word has value. Every single word was thought
Absolutely.
Out and sculpted and not
a
random.
And not too many years ago, you would go out and audition for your agent or you'd go to a casting director.
Right.
And so when you go to these different people and you're going into different environments, that has an impact on you.
It does.
Sure.
And that shifts what you do.
Right.
You walk into a room, it may be an exciting environment, it may be cold and sterile, but all of these things
But it has an effect on the read, so it's not the same old thing all the time.
Yeah.
Plus,
everyone's
different how they direct you, and you're different that day.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
Exactly.
So
but
now the question
home,
becomes, what do you do? What do you do to ensure that you're going to shift what you're doing?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that you can count on that thing that you do, or things that you do.
What do you do?
To cause things to change.
I want to know.
Yeah. Well,
we want to know.
It's basically what actors do. So actors find ways to get underneath characters and become different people. So they play the what-if game really well. So there's craft and technique that you can start to draw upon by doing acting classes, by doing improvisation classes, by changing up how you do things in your studio. I mean, on a very basic level.
Right.
This spot, I'm going to hang a picture of my grandma behind the microphone.
Yeah.
And I'm going to let that have an impact on me.
Yeah, or by a Neumann.
Right.
I'm just saying.
I'm going to stop using this ditzy little microphone I have and get something that says, hey, I'm good.
But you know, when I'm teaching people, a lot of times I can tell that they're stuck in a certain mode, but they're also okay with it. You have to shake them up to let them know this is what's really going on, and it's like building crust around something, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there's been times that I've told people, like women, just to get them in a different mode, I say, go take a pole dancing class, because that's something. It's not for the pole dancing. It's because they have to really come out of their shell. They have to show some vulnerability. They have to do something different.
She
they
made me do that, too, before we got married.
I can totally see Rudy on a pole.
You said you still take them because you don't like them.
Yeah. The pole dancing helps, stimulates me.
Keeps them
short. I still coach them. Point those toes and those.
Use your plans.
That's right. No, but I get people, I'm using that as an example because that's something that will get you out of yourself. Do something different.
Out of your comfort zone.
Out of your, you have to live in an uncomfortable place.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you've got to get used to being comfortable, being uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And there's, I mean, there are lots of theater games and acting games that that you can employ that will help you to do this kind of thing, to change up what's going on at home.
Yeah, and also it happens in life, it's in your life. It's a reflection in the booth, but also it's happening in the person's life or in people's lives. So you have to do things that shake up your life so that you can start to take some risks and do things different.
What's surprising is the extent to which you really have to pursue doing something different. Before you really start to see a difference.
Yeah.
Like I say, I get these reads sent back to me where people feel like, I really went off the charts with this one. And they give it to you and it's like,
I still got one foot
This is kind of cool because I want to know this, and I know this happens. Yeah. Because obviously, you know, you audition from home, right?
A lot, but also in New York, you have to go there.
Go to the studio.
Yeah, I have to go. I have to go.
Damn New Yorkers!
That's right, guys, darn it!
New York,
you're sandwiched between New Yorkers right now. I'd be careful.
Do you ever have the opportunity to have Rudy direct you?
I have him direct me all the time.
All the time.
And he's no joke.
He's no joke.
He's no joke, but I do have to say, I feel like he is a little bit different with me. I feel like he's a little harder on me. I feel like when I hear him with other people, I'm like, that's amazing. Like, I wonder why he doesn't talk to me that way, you know, because when he works with me, it's much more intense.
Yeah.
And so sometimes I respond off it well, and sometimes I'm like, why are you talking to me that way? You know, but we are actually aware of that.
Yeah.
So Rudy will say, I'm gonna come at you differently today. And I say, and I'm going to respond to you differently today. Mm-hmm. And I also consider it not in vain because we work with people all the time. Yeah. They can be tyrannical. They can be amazing. They could be, you know, in the background. They could be numb types. You know, you get all kinds. So we also know that. So we also consider it in the circumstance, like, this is really great that we know that sometimes, you know, being man and wife, it's not easy to work with, or I take things more personal than I normally would if it was someone else, because trust me, I've had many things said to me, but I don't really take it so personal. But when it's Rudy, I'm like, why'd you say it like that? You know?
Are you talking to me?
He's like, come on, I'm trying to help you.
No, you're right.
Chill out.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
I'll give you some margaritas later.
Well, it has to go more than that. It's more than
that's just the warm up.
High stakes here.
High stakes, baby.
I don't know why I have you know, I have my quirks.
Don't we all?
But I kind of like to quote people back to them and see maybe, and obviously the context changes, but I just, because I kind of like to get inside of what were you thinking
I
when
love that.
This happened.
Yeah. Okay.
So who wants to go first?
I'll take it.
Joan!
I'm a risk taker. Okay.
Okay, Joan, so you had said, give a person permission to be who they want to be and to fly.
Oh, yes, I did say that.
Yes, did you?
Yes. And it comes from a place of my own life and in my own heart, how I want to be in life. I really focus on the being aspect of life as opposed to the doing, right? And then the equation is be, do, and have. And most people do in order to have so they can be happy. Well, I focus on the being. Because then if you focus on the state of being, it lends itself to doing, which would have you be happy, right? So that's where that statement comes out of. It comes out of a state of being and wanting to be that way.
Love it.
I love
it. Beautiful.
That's lovely.
Beautiful.
I feel good right now.
Aww. Rudy. I've got something for you now.
You're in trouble. Yeah. You're in trouble, Rudy.
Suddenly found
Mr. Gaskins, you were quoted as saying the following.
Okay.
I realized that I could accept who I am rather than just tolerate myself. This was the first step for me in beginning to fall in love with my life.
I never said anything like that. You're just making stuff up.
Oh, you're a parole officer.
Oh, no, you did.
Do you remember where you said that? That's so lovely. I love that.
Who knows? I'm always writing some kind of cute thing somewhere. Well, I guess I would have to agree with that for sure. And it's I'm a work in progress, though, when it comes to accepting myself.
Yes.
And wow. So each day, yeah. there's that look in the mirror and that, I love you, you're a great person, I want to be with you today, we're going to have a great
got
day.
Got your back.
So you
yeah.
gotta, you
yeah,
know, you literally have to.
I have a hot wife. You should just yes. add that one
yeah.
because it helps.
There are times there are times I look I across mean, at my wife and I go, oh my God, she's with me.
Yeah.
So,
it's
but
good.
Yeah, accepting oneself is not an easy task, especially 24/7.
Yeah.
Right.
But it's definitely a worthwhile challenge to meet as often as you can.
So, Joan, we cannot have you here and not talk about your amazing
so
book.
So you'll have to leave.
We want to make sure everyone knows, you know, what inspired you to write it. It mm-hmm. comes obviously from a place near and dear to your heart, and what you. What gave you the idea to put it together the way you did?
Well, it kind of came together in bits and pieces. But once I had the idea, I knew it was powerful. And I loved that. That's the wings that I was able to drive. But I was taking a course, and it was at a school that's all about transformation. And the course was called Self-Expression and Leadership. And it was a 3.5-month course that by the end you had to have a project and it could be anything. So they did not teach me how to write, actually Rudy did, but we had to identify the different communities in our life. You know, there's family, there's career, and there's different communities, and this is how they were coining it. So we after we identified the careers, the question was posed, what community do you want to have the most impact in these different identifications? So I wanted to impact the voiceover community. My father had just passed away from Alzheimer's. And I also knew that I wanted to do something, because when he had Alzheimer's, I couldn't read anything about it. I couldn't talk about it because I felt like it was so, I was in such pain about him losing his life like this. I couldn't tolerate to read anything about it. So when he passed away, I read everything about it. And so I knew that I wanted to do something for Alzheimer's. So when I was taking this class, which is right after my father had passed away, I had often thought in the past, because I love bookstores, that I wanted to put a book together that was very different than what I thought was on the shelves, a book that I know would have impact on me. So I thought, I know, how about I do a book on, and I interview the top voiceover people, which to me, I thought there was no book out there like that. And I know that I love people's experiences. I love people and I love people's experiences, but I wanted the real experiences. How, right. you know, the failures, the successes, the relationships they had to build. How did they build those relationships? All that juicy stuff I wanted to put in a book. I told Rudy about my project, and next thing you know, he put together this overview based on what I said that was so powerful. Mm-hmm. And I knew nothing about the book industry. I knew nothing about getting a literary agent. But I knew that this overview had to get in people's hands. I was so excited about it. As a matter of fact, when I sent out the overview to the different book publishers and literary agents, I even wrote in the subject, an on-fire overview, or what is it called? Proposal. And so I would get emails back from people. They're like, you're right. That was on fire.
So you did not visit every skyscraper and get in every elevator again?
No.
Okay.
But I did virtually, right?
Yes.
Same energy behind it.
Yeah. I know how to hustle. So I hustled this incredible overview that Rudy wrote. I'm telling you, it was extraordinary. And it was based on everything I had said to him. So together, we ended up writing Secrets of Voiceover Success, and we interviewed the people that are in the book. And one of the first people that was on board was Don LaFontaine. And
of course, yeah.
I remember we did a book signing, and this was in LA here, and it was at the Samuel French bookstore.
Mm-hmm.
And Rudy was talking earlier about people would ask questions. So when I would have book signings, I'd have as many people as I could that were in the book, because I thought that would make it more interesting. Mm-hmm. And then I would take people's questions in the audience. Well, I remember one guy kept saying, you know, how do you get into voiceover? So I remember Cedaring was talking and Dave Fennoy was talking, and he still kept saying, how do you do it? I don't understand how you do it. And finally I said, look, I said, if Don LaFontaine can do it, you can do it. The place went hush. I look over at Don and he was like, right. He couldn't, like, his wife, I told Nita this, because Nita's, his wife said to me, no one has ever stumped Don. I go, I did. And I told her this story. Yeah. If Don LaFontaine can do it, you can do it. And everyone thought I was serious. Don, there's a picture of it. He was like, and I'm hysterical laughing. But the guy took it seriously. He became a voiceover artist after that.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah. But Don was truly a centerpiece.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Chapter one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that's really special about the book is that it covers numerous careers, mm-hmm. and all the
diversity.
Books prior to Secrets of Voiceover Success were from the point of view of one person's career.
Right.
And
right.
How they thought the industry worked.
Right.
And
right.
But people fall into voiceover from so many different places.
Yes.
Right.
They come into it in different ways. Mm-hmm. And this book allowed them to kind of pick and choose the parts of different careers that matched theirs.
Right.
So they could navigate their own little way of doing it.
Right.
This
That's
one comes out of radio.
Right.
This one came out of acting.
Right.
This
Dancing.
One was a lawyer. And yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you donate the proceeds to the Alzheimer's
yes,
Association.
Yes, and I work with them, too.
100%.
Yeah. Yeah, I called them, and I told them I was writing this book and what my idea was, and they were like, okay, you know, we've had other people call, not voiceover, but we've had other people call, and we got a donation of a dollar or two. I said, no, you don't get it.
Well, you don't work for a dollar.
No.
So you don't work for a dollar anymore.
That was my past, people. No, but I had called the Alzheimer's Association, let them know about my idea, and that I was serious about donating, and they're like, yeah, okay. So I had to prove to them that not only was I serious, but that this book was, in my mind, going to be huge and create an impact in the community I was in. Mm-hmm. And I said, and I wouldn't be surprised if the people in the book, as it comes out, they are all going to have some kind of association with Alzheimer's. So as a result, one of the last things in everyone's chapter in the book is what they would do if they lost the ability to communicate, mm-hmm. which is what happens last stages of Alzheimer's is what I noticed about my dad was that he lost his ability to speak. And so that's what we connected to voiceover mm-hmm. and the book was that particular aspect. So I asked that to everyone and the answers were fascinating to me.
Yeah.
Also how they would like their voices to be remembered. And that was also another fascinating answer. But the way the book reads, it reads as a narrative. I really interviewed everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And so the answers created the narrative and the story. Mm. So it's not question and answer
right.
setup.
Right.
But I had to really sell Alzheimer's on the fact that I was serious and that I still donate my proceeds. And not just that's voiceover, but other events that I created, yeah. I also donated the proceeds. I'm like, you don't get it. This is it.
And the Alzheimer's
so
Association
serious.
Really vetted us, too, because, you know, they had the CEO of the association
write
a piece
the
for the book, mm-hmm. and they submitted artwork from Alzheimer's patients.
Right.
In different stages of Alzheimer's, they would do artwork. Mm-hmm. And my idea was I wanted to include that. Now, some people might go, well, what does that have to do with voiceover? But to me, what has to do with voiceover is all of this is our voices out there.
Mm-hmm.
And some people's voices were going into extinction. And
mm-hmm.
and we have very strong voices. Our whole livelihood is based on our voice. So giving back to a community of people that are losing their ability to do that was very powerful for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. The key really was community, because even the Alzheimer's Association, as you suggested,
mm-hmm.
was sort of like, voiceover? Alzheimer's? What's the connection?
Mm-hmm.
So, well, the connection is someone who's been impacted by
it's
Alzheimer's
the humanity.
Disease.
Yes.
It's natural for them to
yeah.
do something
yeah.
in the realm of their community.
Sure.
As opposed to them launching a new career that's going to be, now I'm just all about fighting
right.
against
right.
Alzheimer's
yeah.
disease.
Right.
Allowing people to do it within their community makes it a lot more doable.
Yeah, and much more impactful. And they even, the president even wrote in the book, he said, this is the most unique form of expression anyone has ever taken
mm-hmm.
towards Alzheimer's Association. Mm-hmm. So they eventually really came on
Embraced
and came on
it,
big.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
huge.
David Hyde Pierce wrote the foreword to
yes.
the book.
Right.
Yes.
And his
love him.
Part of his rationale was, well, I do voiceover work.
Right.
And he's been impacting his family
mm-hmm.
with Alzheimer's disease.
Yes.
So he's a spokesperson for the Alzheimer's Association. So he said, so somebody brought together two things I love a lot.
Right. Yeah.
And
right.
so
Exactly.
Let me write the
forward. How can people get it? How can people get the book?
Well, You can get it at any bookstore. It's available in the acting department of bookstores. Amazon. Also on Amazon.
As always, Amazon.
There's always, that's the quickest and fastest. Yeah. Also, my publishing company, which is sentientpublications.com. You can also order the book through Sentient.
Yeah.
But it's very easy to get.
And you have a Kindle version, too.
I do. And as a matter of fact, we are going to be putting out another book, Secrets of Voiceover Success. And we're also thinking about another book, too.
Great.
Yeah. Maybe we'll be in one of those.
Love it.
Yeah, exactly.
Uh-oh.
Because now that they can't live without us.
That's right.
You see how things work?
Well, you guys.
That's exactly what will happen to you when you go to That's Voiceover, see?
That's right.
You'll meet people, and then all of a sudden, you're in their book.
And all of a sudden, you can't live without them. And then you have to pant to let them know.
Well, we love you guys, and we thank you for all that you do
love
for the community and for humanity.
That's music to my ears, Stacey.
Thank you so much for making time for us, and we feel like we've made
absolutely
lifelong friends.
You bring life to life, I must say. And you, Mr. Genius. What can I say?
I know.
There's no other word that goes after genius, by the way. That's you.
Sweetie.
You guys are awesome. Thank you for coming down to show, sharing with
us. We love you guys.
Sharing with them. Mwah. We'll see you all at That's Voiceover 2013.
August
17th. That's right.
August 17th.
we just got buzzed by Chuck and Stacy.
And man, was it a ball.
Not only a ball, it was a ball and a half.
Well, that's all the time we have with Joan Baker and Rudy Gaskins. How amazing are they?
Fabulous time, awesome people, love them.
Love them.
And now you guys have a little bit more information to go out there and build a huge business.
Yes, and make sure you are following us on Facebook, Twitter, and Pinterest at VO Buzz Weekly. You guys take care, and just remember, you always have time for a little buzz.
Don't just listen to VO Buzz Weekly. Watch the show in stunning HD video at VOBuzzWeekly.com, on their YouTube channel, or on the app.
VO Buzz Weekly is sponsored by Chuck Duran's Demo That Rock. The voiceover demo producer to the stars is now available to you. Visit DemosThatRock.com and take your voiceover career to the next level.
See you next time. And remember, you always have time for a little buzz.